Well, good morning and welcome back to Wind Tucson on this great Thursday, first day of autumn, although it still feels like one of the days of summer. And we are thrilled to have you back with us today. Today's show is going to be fun. Sometimes every once in a while, we just need to take a step back and just look at some of the fun things that there are to do in Tucson. So I want to let you know that there is a wonderful project going on in Tucson right now for women over 50, the 50 over 50 project. It has been designed and created by Michelle Beaumont Owens of Artifact Photography Studio, and she has created this and will be having an annual portrait gala held this year, October 13th, at the Savoy Opera House. And what she has done is she has gotten 50 women in Tucson to come forward and share their stories. And she's put together this amazing photographic gala of women who are all distinctly different, all distinctly beautiful, and they will be, and she will be presenting a photographic story of who these women are, and we're hoping to get her on here in a few minutes. Yes.
So that's an interesting project, and I'll get that up on the web for you, Kathleen, just so we can have a little information about that project, the 50 for 50 in Tucson.
Yes, and
there we go. Get that. We can get that. And it's not there, of course, when I need it. Well, tell us a little bit about what you know about the project.
So thank you. I was lucky enough to participate in this project, and if anyone's seen the promotions for the show, those photographs were used by the station to promote the show. So Michelle, any photographs you see regarding Wind Tucson, our photographer, Michelle Owens, took those pictures. And we're having a few technical difficulties, but we're going to work around it. So one of the things I think people don't understand is that, you know, you don't die at 50. 50 kind of is where you get smart about life and the things that matter and the things that don't. And although society seems to be based on a very young perspective, one of the things I know is that the older I get, the smarter I get, and finding a place to contribute that wisdom is something that's really important. We have a lot of great people that have spent time in careers, and being able to make a difference because you have had life experiences really, really matters. And so one of the reasons that we're doing this show is so that we can have people call in and share what's happening in their part of the world, what's going on, in trying to contribute to the overall problems that we're facing in Tucson. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back right after this with Wind Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn. Welcome back. I've been told Mercury's in retrograde. Maybe that's what we'll blame this on.
That works for me.
So I want to tell Michelle, who's desperately been trying to call into the station now for 15 minutes, that I called her on my cell phone. I'm a woman. I can outsmart this situation, right?
You're a troubleshooter.
I am a troubleshooter. Thanks, Michelle. So we are improvising here. Michelle is on my cell phone. We're going to figure out which gerbils have eaten through the lines at the station. And Michelle, first of all, thank you so much for being here. The project that you're doing is really exciting, 50 over 50. Now, I try not to admit that I'm over 60, so over 50 was I could adjust to that. But What made you think of this project? And tell me about why 50 over 50 and your inspiration or your motivation for telling those stories.
So the 50 over 50 projects is a global sensation. So they are happening all over the world by photographers and their communities. And it really spoke to me because when I turned 50, my life drastically changed. I left a corporate career of 30 years and decided to take the plunge and open my own business. And as time went on, I noticed that women who are over 50 felt really reluctant about being photographed. And I wanted to do something about that. I wanted to show them that they are beautiful, that they are viable, and that they deserve to be seen. And the project has been a really empowering experience for everyone involved, including me.
Well, and interest of full disclosure, I am one of your 50 over 50 women this year. And I would echo that as we get older, we get wrinkles and we get gray hair and we get laugh lines and everything, gravity is not our friend. And so I would tell you that the experience that I had in working with you was not just someone taking pictures. It was personal, it was in depth, and you really took the time, and I don't know how you did it with 49 other women, but you made me feel like I was the only one, and that is something special. So how can people find out about this? I think you're going to start with another class. Are you going to do this again after this group of 50 women?
I am. So I'm very excited to announce that we will be photographing the next 50 women in 2023, and that will be followed by a portrait gala as well in April of 2024. So we created a website specifically for this called the 50 over 50 experience.com. So there's important links there. We have the portrait gala.
Michelle, will you go back and say that again? Say it really
sure.
Slow. Thanks.
So
go ahead.
The 50 over 50 experience, and 50 is spelled 50. So the 50over50experience.com.
Wonderful. And what is this going to look like in October when people come into your event?
So I'm so excited. I just received the test print back from the printers this week. So they are big and they are creative. So a lot of the images I've been showing online has been the common theme across all the women, which is the black turtleneck photos. But at the Savoy Opera House, we will have 50 creative full-color portraits of all of the women on display. They're going to be illuminated in the space. And not only that, it was really important for me, beyond the portraits, to really get to know these women and also interview them. So following the show, we'll also have a portrait magazine that will have full feature articles on each one of the participants as well, to really share what their experiences is and what it's like to be a woman over 50.
When you were selecting these women, were there any criteria? Was there anything? And the women that are in this group are not alike. There's many diverse, different people from all walks of life. So,
correct.
So when you were looking, was there anything that you were striving for in the selection of your participants?
Well, of course, we always want diversity, right? We want diversity in experience and all aspects of life, body shapes, ethnicities, everything. But really, once we got started, the majority of the women came in by referral. So as I photographed women, they were like, you know who should be in this? Oh my gosh, she's so amazing. You have to meet her. And then it kind of happened quite organically of how people came in. So that's why I'm excited too with this next round, with a bigger audience, with being on their radar, really how that's going to take shape for next year as well. So so it is going to be quite the party because a lot of the women know each other And I also love that it was almost like a little bit of a nomination process that way. But I also wanted women to have the freedom to participate if they felt compelled to do so. And there were some women who really had a story to tell that they wanted to make sure that they were able to tell it. And I'm so proud that they have chosen me to be the one that really shines a spotlight on their experience.
Well, we're going to take a small break. And oh, we're not going to take a small break. I was wrong. I've been wrong a lot today. It's all good. We are adjusting. This is like learning to ride a bike and your training wheels keep falling off. So I have a secret. I love shoes. I know I'm not the only woman over 50 that loves shoes, but my secret is that if you've got great looking shoes, they're looking at your shoes and they're not looking at your wrinkles. So that's my free takeaway from this. What did you... I try to be funny today. It may or may not be working. So what I'd like to ask you, though, since you put this all together and you were from corporate America, how has this transition been for you to go from, nine to five job with, someone telling you this is what you have to be accountable for, to really designing something from nothing and creating this event? What's that like? And is this your first time doing this, or have you done this before?
Well, so fortunately, this is my first event as a photographer. So, but in my corporate career, I managed a lot of trade shows for the companies that I worked for events that we were attending. And so it's not my first time trying to put together a big event with music and dinner and entertainment and indoors and things happening outdoors and really kind of making it a fun event for all ages. So to be clear, this just isn't for women. Men can attend all ages. We want families there. I want to get as many people celebrating these women, because really when we hit 50, a lot of times we just feel ignored. Even going gray can be a revolutionary, act these days. Women are getting let go from their positions just for letting their hair grow, go gray during COVID. So, to really say, in your second half of life, you can step out and shine and be at the height of your power and not feel invisible is incredible. So I want to make sure that happens on October 13th, where these women are really seen and appreciated for all their accomplishments.
I think you've done a great job. If I'm in the public and I want to come to this event, or maybe I'm another woman 50 over 50 that didn't participate, but I want to kind of check this out to see if it's something I'd like to do next year, what's the best way to engage with you to get that information or to show up at the Savoy? So what do people need to do if they want to connect with you or come to this event?
So I would say, please go to the 50over50experience.com, and there's a link there to purchase tickets on Eventbrite. And we are serving dinner, so the earlier people purchase tickets, the better. So I can give the caterers and pretty accurate number for how many people will be there. So please help me out with that. So come and take a look at it. So that would be a great way to really take a look at it, see, because next year will be very similar. I really like how this event has come together. And so I think it's a good model for what we're going to do in the future. And so come out, engage. If it's something that you would like to do, then the next step would be to reach out to me and we'll have a conversation. And that's really the first step, because number one, any photographer that you would choose to take your portraits, you need to feel very comfortable with. It's very vulnerable having your portraits taken. So you need to be extremely comfortable with the photographer that you choose to capture your story, which really what it is. It's telling a story through the photographs that we capture. And so that's why every photo shoot is different too. Every woman has different goals on how they want to be seen or what parts of their personality that they would like captured. And so we sit down, we have a conversation with that, and we plan. So going into the photo shoot, we know exactly what we're going to capture, the wardrobe changes that are going to happen, the styling, the sets. And so all of that is managed all the way through the process.
As someone who participated, you really contributed to me. What was contributed to you in this process?
Oh, gosh. What really makes my heart happy, you know, you start something, as you mentioned before, a small business, and you really don't know where it's going to lead or what it's going to develop into. So it's a little bit of a leap of faith and going, okay, I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, am I? And the answer has come back a resounding yes. The women that come back are like, oh my gosh, Michelle, this has just been an amazing experience. I am pretty. And I'm sorry, I don't care how old you get, you want to be pretty. And so coming back and going, okay, I still have it. I feel good about myself. I love these photos. I love that these photos that we captured are going to outlive me, and that these are going to be the images that my family and friends have after I'm gone. And it's so true. It's, you know, we're so used to just grabbing snapshots with cameras these days, and they're not really an accurate representation of who we are. So when we really sit down and we think about our portraits, this is what we used to do when people were painted, 200 years ago, but their portraits, there's a lot of symbolism in those oil paintings. And I like to bring the same thing to my photographs. So it kind of symbolism, even if it's not apparent to the viewer and who's looking at those portraits, when you or your family looks at them, they know. And I think that's an important piece of it.
So it's not just a photograph, but you're actually capturing someone's personality. I think that's what I was struck with.
Yeah. And I see the difference between portraiture and other creative, fashion photography. Portraits are all about the person and the connection that that subject has to the viewer. And so a really effective portrait is when you're looking at that image and thinking, you're almost having a conversation with them. That expression is coming back and it's something that you can engage with. And so that's why I like to take my time. And somebody comes into my studio, even for headshots, it's not, oh, come on in 10 minutes and we're done. It's the same process regardless of the types of photos, the genre that I'm photographing, because each one of those genres, you should still have a connection that you can engage with between the viewer and the subject. And that's primarily, that's always top of mind for me with every photo shoot.
And one of the things you mentioned, but I want to underline it, is that you had women promoting other women. Like, you have to meet this woman. And I think I'm a little prejudiced about this, but I think if we're going to solve the problems, we really need to engage women. And
yes.
And I think through your project, you will demonstrate that you've got a lot of strong women who are committed to making this world a better place. We're the moms, we're the grandmoms. And was that true with the women that you met in this project?
Absolutely. So, and interestingly enough, too, women at this age, all of them have said this is the happiest that they've been in their lives. And you would not think that would be true for what we see kind of in the general media out there.
Right.
Women now feel comfortable. They feel confident. They know that they can get things done. They know what they're passionate about, and they want to engage. And one of the most exciting things about this project is I've already been able to put people together based upon different goals people might have. Like, oh, I've always wanted to do this, or I need people to do this. I'll go, ooh, you know who you should talk to? And so I love that through this process too, I'm able to connect, women with women, for solutions to all sorts of different things. And that's been an exciting part of this project for me as well, being able to make those introductions.
Michelle, thank you so, so much. I will see you very soon. And for those that are interested, Women 50 Over 50, I'm Kathleen Wynn. We'll be back right after this break. You are listening to Win Tucson, brought to you each Monday through Friday by me, Kathleen Wynn, where we're promising to turn down the rhetoric and turn up the results to give us all a better Tucson. I am so grateful today for my very special guest and friend, Leanne Hall. Leanne was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, where she was married for 40 years and raised four children. While raising those kids, her and her husband owned and operated a construction company, and she was a very successful businesswoman and worked in front of different groups to expand horizons and desires of her customers, and just a really successful business person. This eventually led her to run for a seat in the United States Congress in 2010. I will tell you, having just done that, no good deed goes unpunished. And these groups that she's worked with, and doing that, she really developed her voice for giving business community a better fiscal responsibility in our country and doing good things for business. And after many campaign speeches and debates, it became very evident to Leanne that speaking was one of her gifts and passions, and having the ability to make a difference in people's lives. Unfortunately, in 2012, she had the tragic loss of her own son, her 16-year-old son, to suicide. And at that point, Leanne's life dramatically changed, and she founded a nonprofit called Andy's Hull's Sunshine Foundation. The mission of this group is to raise awareness of the high rate of suicide while providing coping skills to deal with life's challenges. With a You Matter approach, Leanne is out educating, supporting, and encouraging those so that they can live a life and they can save a life if, in the fact, they believe that suicide is an option. I am so grateful to have on my show today Leanne Hull, who continues to do this work to honor her son. We're about to come up on a 10-year anniversary of Andy having taken his life. Leanne, thank you so much for being with me today, for being on the show, for the work that you do, and welcome to Win Tucson.
Thanks, Kathleen. I'm very honored to be here with you and so thankful that we do have this friendship. So thanks again.
So we have been, this is National Suicide Month, and you've had this organization for 10 years. Can you tell my listeners what's happening now after 10 years with your organization, and it's grown now outside of Arizona, outside of the country, actually. So share with them the success of Andy Sunshine Foundation.
You know, the foundation has grown. We started it just 4 months after Andy passed and began speaking in schools, trying to educate administrators, teachers, kids, parents, whomever we could reach out to. And then it evolved into, expanded, I should say, into military bases and construction sites. And some of the projects that we do, we have a You Matter wristband. And we ship those You Matter wristbands literally all over the world, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, everywhere. And we ship them free to however many you want. Just this last summer, we actually shipped 18,000 of them to one school district in New York. So
wow.
Very simple message, and yet seems to make a difference in people's lives. We all just want to know that we matter. So one of my favorite parts of the foundation is our wristbands.
And you just said something that I think I don't want to step over, which construction sites. Mm-hmm. So is there suicide happening at our construction sites?
Yeah, predominantly on the industrial sites, it's actually suicide is listed as the leading cause of death, which most people don't, realize. They really think it's an accident or something like that. But suicide is the leading cause of death in construction sites because it's predominantly men. And in our society, it is still predominantly men and boys. The statistics show that will end their lives. Girls and women attempt more than boys. Women and men and boys are more successful, if you want to, that's an odd word to use, but at completing suicide.
We had heard that last week, and I understand that men typically won't talk about their problems and they'll let it fester up, and then this is what happens, that we lose them. I'm going to assume that's the same with our military.
Oh, absolutely. I have two boys in the military as well, and have experienced that firsthand, the struggles that they've faced when they do experience difficulties, going forward and asking for help. As much as we talk the good talk, or the military talks the good talk about they want to focus on suicide prevention. The problem in the military is if you ask your supervisors for help, it can threaten your career. And so you know, I know my boys never wanted their careers to be threatened. So yes, they will suffer in silent rather than asking for help. And until we change that, the suicide rate in the military is going to continue. Same on the construction sites. I mean, think about this. If you have a man who's out there operating a big crane or something like that, and he goes to his supervisor and says, you know, my head's not thinking correctly right now. Well, what do you think the first response is? They're going to pull him off the crane, which could affect his livelihood, his ability to take care of his family. So he's not going to speak up.
What had you, were doing what you were doing. What had you be put into that situation? Because I know that you worked in construction. So was it just that you knew those people? Because quite frankly, until we talked about it yesterday, I hadn't even thought about that this was an area where we should be concerned.
Yeah, we did own our own construction business for 28 years, which opened the door. But it was really when my husband went to work on industrial construction sites, and he was traveling all over the country, and his job was the safety director. He was actually the Gulf Coast regional safety manager for a huge international company. And it was at those safety talks and learning all of the statistics on the construction sites that you begin to realize the challenges they're facing. And so that opened the door for me to go in and speak on these industrial sites. And surprisingly, they're very, very receptive to this. Probably even more so than the school districts are, weirdly enough.
Well, I'm thinking it's very hard to get trained labor right now, and that you'd want to keep your labor safe and you'd want to keep them healthy and whole. So that part doesn't actually surprise me, but I understand why an employer would want to make sure that their the mental health and the mental fitness of their workers is sound. It's very important. One of the things I've watched you do, and I've been to many of your presentations, is engage with young people in schools. And I know COVID really, with schools being shut down, you almost lost 2 years. And the students that I saw you, what was always amazing is after you told your story, was that invariably 10, 15, 20 students would come up, depending on how many were in the audience, and tell you they had thought of committing suicide, or they had a...
That bringing out of the emotional response of the kids. And that's challenging. And right now, in particular with COVID, you know, the schools just feel like they're so far behind on education that they're not even addressing the other issues. I know for firsthand experience, my grandchildren, they're in one of the largest school districts in Arizona, and their high school has no, and it's a huge high school, no social workers right now, none. So to get help for these kids is next to impossible. It's worse now after COVID than it was, because there's just nobody to man the fort.
Do they have school resource officers?
I don't. You mean like a police officer?
Yes.
I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you that fact. I just know because I've tried to enlist some support from my grandkids at the high school. So I'm very familiar with the lack of resources on an emotional standpoint. So that's a huge concern for me, because these kids have, you know, they've lost their confidence. If it wasn't enough struggle before COVID hit, it's even more so now, because they can't pass tests. They can't do the work. My granddaughter, she's taking statistics. She has no teacher in there right now for statistics. It's a senior class.
That's
no teacher. They're doing Zoom meetings.
That's
so
crazy.
So what do you think that does for our kids? It makes them feel like they're just not important enough. And where they already feel like that anyway after COVID.
Leanne, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back right after this. I'm Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson, where we focus on issues, not politics. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm your host, Kathleen Wynn, and my very special guest today, Leanne Hull, the founder of Andy Hull's Sunshine Foundation, a foundation to honor Leanne's son, who committed suicide when he was 16 years old. It has been existing now for 10 years, and Leanne talks not only to students, but to veterans, to workers, to adults, about the cost of suicide, how to stop suicide and the impact. Leanne, thank you for staying on and joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
We were talking about students and the impact. What do students do if they believe a friend of theirs may be committing suicide? What do you recommend? So if we speak out, we know that if we can catch somebody who is going through depression, they maybe start disengaging from school. There's signs and everything else. But if a peer believes that another friend of theirs is going to commit suicide, what should they do?
The two most important things that they can do is, number one, is put the friend before the friendship. So most kids don't want to, as they perceive it, tattle on their friend.
Right.
And for fear of losing the friendship. So that's one of the things I speak on. Put the friend before the friendship. Your friendship will come back, but it can't come back if that person is not there. So you have to tell someone who's responsible, an adult, your parents, a counselor, a teacher, someone else. You have to involve someone else. And so many kids also will think that they can manage it on their own. If I just go, I can talk them through it. I can help them. You are not equipped to do that. I'm not equipped to do it. It is one of the things that I'm very vocal about, especially having the foundation that I have. I am not 1-800 crisis call. I am there to help direct you to resources and to encourage you and to support you. I'm not trained for a crisis. I'm going to help you find someone who is trained for a crisis. So that's one of the most important things that I speak on when I'm talking to the kids. And then the second thing that I talk about is so many people, and not just the kids, but all of us, so many people are focused on being successful and creating success. And my thing that I speak on is the power of failure and to embrace failure and to be prepared for it. Look, when I ran for Congress in 2010, I came in last place out of 10 candidates. You know, it was not a winning position, but what it did was that laid the foundation for me because of all the people I met, all the experiences I encountered. It opened doors so that when I got ready to establish my nonprofit, my foundation, I had resources. So had I not had that experience and been willing to go through it and been willing to experience the failure, I would never have had the opportunity to have had the success of what I have in my foundation. So I teach the kids to be prepared for failure. What's in your toolbox of coping skills? What do you have? What are your go-tos when you fail a class or your boyfriend dumps you or you don't make the team or whatever that looks like? Be prepared for the failures. Anticipate them.
I think coping is something that is a skill that we don't teach, and it's really necessary if you're going to survive the world. And what kids are facing right now, you know, a lot of kids lost 2 years of socialization in schools and education. And they also lost just the dates and the all the things that matter. You know, if you think back to when you were in high school or when I was in high school, all those things that happened that helped shape you, that created friendships. And now if they don't have coping skills, everything seems to be a problem, and if the problems appear to you to be insurmountable, like you cannot deal with it, suicide seems like a viable option. And as you know, unfortunately, our numbers in Arizona aren't good. We continue to see the numbers go up, and then we've got the complication of the fentanyl problem, and we've got other issues that are happening. And so I think what you're saying is so valuable because children need to learn to cope. You're not a success every single time. My joke is right now is that if you lose Congress in Tucson, you get a radio show. But That's just what I've been saying to deal with my failure, if you will. And I appreciate that you so boldly say that you came in last out of 10. I think that tells me you've got very strong coping skills. So,
and that's a key point, because we focus so much on how do we help the kids and all the things that the kids are facing. And I love talking to the adults, because what I want to say to every adult out there who's listening and who has it, you know, whomever I can reach, is what kind of a role model are you? Because frankly, the adults have the worst coping skills. They have worse coping skills than so many of the kids that I speak with. And if our kids are watching us, why would they know how? How would they know how to cope by the way that we conduct ourselves, by the way we handle ourselves on social media, in situations? Hey, if you're a parent and you're an adult and you're having trouble with your marriage, your relationship, or work, what do you do? How do you show your kids that you cope? Do you come home and open a bottle of wine and sit down and drink all night, or go out to the bar and hang out with everybody? Is that how you're coping? And is that the best message to send to our kids? So the best thing we can do for our kids is to be that model of, here, let's talk about how we're going to handle the stress that we're facing in our lives as adults and share that with our kids.
I think that you bring up a great point, which is that we should teach our kids to be independent, self-reliant. And you can't teach that unless you can demonstrate it.
Yes.
And it's so important. I think, and I'm grateful, God, my dad will be gone 10 years this October. And I think about, out of the many lessons he taught me, was self-reliance and being independent were the things that he was striving for, that no matter what happened, we could be successful, and we could find our way, that we were not reliant on our parents for our entire life. When my husband and I lived in Mesa, we had a basement home, and my big show for success was that none of my children, after they went to college, lived in my basement. And I think there's something to say for that, that we as parents have a job to do to have our kids be successful. If your children can... and we can model success, or at least successful behaviors. That doesn't mean, I think you've really said a great point about, we all have failures. We all have things that go wrong. First part of my radio show today. But after that, we need to be able to recover and to keep going on. And I think we actually learn more from our failures than we do from our successes. Because when you're winning, you think, oh, I've got whatever. But when you fail, you actually have to reflect, and that reflection shouldn't be a death sentence. And that's, I think, what's missing for our young people and our veterans also. The other group that you didn't mention, but I think you could also have an impact in, is our local law enforcement, because yes, they've been under the same stress and pressure that our military, if not even greater, because we have decided to attack them for the job that they do and to demean law enforcement for doing their job. So have you had any intersection with law enforcement in the work that you do?
Very difficult to get into the law enforcement community. I have not had any inroads. Definitely more luck in the military. Look, I love what I do, and unfortunately, I'm extremely qualified. Losing Andy, my child, and then my mom, and then my husband of 40 years, and then my son-in-law just recently. So tremendous amount of loss, which I believe constitutes my, allows me the qualifications of the alphabet soup after my name. I love teaching people to be that victor versus victim. And you talked about, I think you said something about faith, and that is a really about believing and here's my thing. When something bad happens to you, so many people want to just say, why me? The first thing I said after Andy passed, I said two things. I will praise you in the storm. And instead of why, I said, why not? why not me? I was not mad at God. And if ever there was a time for faith, it's when you're dropped to your knees. Because it's easy to have faith when things are going well. But you know what? Your true character and personality comes out, and your belief structure and your faith, when you're shaken to the core. And that's when you can become the victor instead of the victim.
I think that there's no more wiser words than those. It's when someone is at their worst, when someone has pretty much lost it all, losing a child, it's something no parent should have to go through. And it changes you. It changes the dynamic of your family. You have three other children. You love those children. I know that it's been a journey, because it's not easy. Yeah. And there's an impact that people don't understand. So Leanne, I will have you back. I love you. I just want to say thank you for everything you do, for the many contributions that you make. Please don't stop. And Leanne Holm, and thank you, Andy, for having such a great mom.
Thank you, Kathleen, for having me.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Join us tomorrow in Win Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn.